The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
What's up, Bills Mafia? I'm Fernando Shimoji, that's your leading the charge. And today I'm going to talk free agency preview. Greg Thompson will join me soon. And we're going to talk free agency preview. The Dark Wednesday that just happened this week, right? And I feel like everybody is still kind of shocked and kind of surprised about the moves. But it wasn't totally unexpected. And obviously, the Bills needed to open that cap space. So, Greg will join me. We'll talk a lot about the possibilities with the Bills opening some cap space to try to be players in this free agency and how they can do so. So, join us. Feel free to comment via chat. We'll be able to interact a little bit and talk a lot about the Bills and all the possibilities going forward with all those moves that still are going to happen for sure. The Bills still got to make some moves, renegotiating or restructuring Josh Allen's deal. Obviously, it's a must, and it should happen at any time now. And we'll be able to talk a lot about all this kind of stuff. Please, Bills Mafia, hit that like button, subscribe to the Buffalo Rumblings channel, support us creating content for you. This episode will be also available on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, right after this live show. It will be up there. And I always appreciate every like, every download, every play. It helps a lot for sure. So let me introduce all the stuff that we're going to talk about today. Obviously, Greg Thompson from Cover One joining me soon. Dark Wednesday, what happened, Bills Mafia? We're just moving on. An era just ended, and the Bills finally moving on from Tre'Davious White, moving on from Jordan Poyer, Mitch Morse, guys that have been cornerstones for this franchise since McDermott arrived in Buffalo, guys that have been a big part of what the Bills have been able to become in the last few seasons. Obviously, guys that helped a lot in the community, guys that established themselves as big part of the Bills organization and fan favorites, obviously. But at the same time, guys that weren't anymore on their primes, right? I think it's fair to say that we have been playing without Tre'Davious White for two seasons now, at least when it matters the most, right? The playoff run, we haven't been able to count on Tre'Davious White, and so you can't miss a guy that you haven't been able to count on, right? So yeah, Trey was awesome in his prime. It's so unfortunate with all the injuries. It's the worst thing possible for an athlete to have problems with injuries, and I feel really bad for Tre'Davious White. We always will think about the what ifs, right? If he was able to stay healthy, to contribute, he obviously could have been a great piece for the Bills runs, but unfortunately it happened. and the Bills decided to move on, and we can't really be mad at Brandon Bean at all, because, for example, he needed to bring Rasul Douglas when he lost to Davis White, right? And I'm talking about Poyer. We know we always connected Poyer to Micah Hyde, and the opposite is also true. And I couldn't imagine a more a fairer way of ending that era with they finishing the time in Buffalo together as well. They arrived together. They established themselves as all-pro players, as a safety tandem together, and obviously now this era is ending with both leaving Buffalo together as well, right? Nothing official on Micah Hyde's possible retirement so far, but it's very probable that it happens, and Poyer moving on. We gotta be honest. Yeah, he made a great play against the Chiefs, kind of giving the Bills an extra life down the road in that game, but Jordan Poyer hasn't been the same. He hasn't been that guy that has flew all over the field, has made crazy interceptions, has made crazy game-changing plays consistently. And I'm actually happy to be able to remember Jordan Poyer's last game as a Bill with a big play, just like he did, because he didn't do many of that during this last season and clearly lost in step. So, love Poyer, a great player, one of my favorite Bill safeties ever. One of the best Bill safeties ever, for sure. But the time was coming for him. It was pretty clear. He tested free agency last season and couldn't really generate a great deal, a great contract. He decided to come back to the Bills with a cheaper contract, right? And unfortunately, Father Time is undefeated, right? So, Jordan Poyer time has come, and it's sad, but not necessarily worse for the Bills with all of this thing. And I feel like Mitch Morse is the guy that was still playing at the best level of all those guys that have been cut, or at least the main guys that have been cut. And yeah, Mitch Morse. He's a leader, he's a veteran, he's experienced. He's a big part of what the Bills offensive line has become recently. Finally, we could see some steadiness. We could see the offensive line not being something to be worried about, right? Finally, we could see all of the guys staying healthy all season long, playing at a good level, right? But and Mitch Morse was a big part of that, for sure, with his leadership and with his play on the field. But again, we got to be honest, that's a guy that, despite the last season without any injuries and any issues, that's a guy with a concussion history. That's a guy that might be one concussion away of needing to call it quits from the NFL. And he's a good center, but not an awesome center. He's not an all-pro kind of player. It's not like losing Jason Kelce like the Eagles just did with the retirement of the potential Hall of Famer guy, right? So the Bills lose a steady veteran, an experienced one, who plays at a great, still a good level. But we got to trust Aaron Cromer there, right? And I can't really imagine this decision being made without consulting Aaron Cromer and having his approval or having something positive being said from him, like, okay, we can live without Morse. We can, maybe McGovern can move there, and I see the potential there. Edwards can start at left guard, and I'm comfortable with that, right? Cromer had Edwards as a starter with the Rams and in a Super Bowl team. So, the Bills still have five guys they can trust, right? And yeah, there are question marks about McGovern at center, but he did really well in his first season as a regular starter for the Bills and at left guard. We'll see. The Bills can still draft guys there. Cutting Morse and opening that cap space was a must for Brandon Bean. at the same time, this kind of seems like the Ryan Bates trade is a little bit worse now after that move. For me, it's true because Bates offered you some floor level center play, right? You could trust Bates to come in, to not mess up, to play at a decent level as a starter. And that makes the Bates trade a little bit worse, in my opinion. However, in the Bates situation, I feel like if they told him the plan and if they showed him what's going to happen and told him he still wouldn't be the starter with the plan moving McGovern to center and starting Edwards, I can understand Bates maybe growing not comfortable with that role as a top backup and never starting again and wanting to go to Chicago where people wanted him there to start for them. So I can see Bates kind of requesting the trade there, and I can see Brandon Bean not wanting to do anything wrong to the player, just like we know Bean hasn't used the franchise tag on players anymore to have a good relationship with players and agents. I feel like he tried to do it right to Bates, who has been a good player for the Bills for some years now, and traded him to Chicago to find to please him and to do the right thing for the guy, to allow him to start elsewhere and move on with a pick, another pick where the Bills have a draft they can kind of retool, kind of rebuild. So I feel like it's a possibility. Randy Harmon is showing up here in the comment section. Always welcome to the show, Randy. And he says, which means Bates was beaten out in some respect by McGovern and Edwards. Easy decision to move him for some compensatory if they felt it was close or even leaning away from Bates. That's true. I feel like Bates would still offer that comfort level of, we have Bates that we can plug and play at both right and left guard spots. We can plug and play at center. You can even play him at tackle, maybe. And I like that. I like that comfort level. But just like Wendy said, apparently McGovern was practicing at center last season in Cromer's rotation, and Cromer felt comfortable with him there. So it's understandable to see the Bills moving on and doing the right thing to the player. It never hurts to have good relationship with players, with agents, right? After all, we know that it's pretty common to not have good relationship with players that leave the team, right? So that's why I feel like they did it right to Ryan Bates. So I feel like this about all those moves, but Greg is joining us today, and let's check it out with him if he agrees with the stuff I'm saying. Greg Thompson, welcome to the show so much. So I really appreciate you joining us today, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it. It's been a crazy week being a Bills fan, and it's just been wild to try to keep up with all the moves. Obviously, we've had a lot of different windows of time where, you know, different transactions have happened, and there's been, you know, surprises and different things that maybe we didn't always expect. But I've never seen anything like Wednesday. Between Tuesday and Wednesday, we had like 14 different transactions that took place, and, you know, five different key players released, traded away, restructured, pay cuts. Just I've never seen that, and so much of it in like that 4-hour window that all happened back to back to back with all the announcements. I've just never seen anything quite like that. It was an absolutely wild experience, and you know, all of them, I think there was logic to all of them. I don't think any of them were like crazy, terrible, stupid decisions. I can't believe they did that. Mm-hmm. But a lot of them were painful. A lot of them were players that we had grown to really root for and support and were hoping would either continue at a high level, like Mitch Morris, where we knew like, hey, there's some risk, but we're not sure how much longer it's going to last, or coming back like Trey White, or is there a little bit left in the tank with Jordan Poyer? All guys that had previously had, you know, all pro level play. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that anyone was going to try to make the case that, oh, yeah, they're still worth the contract that you're going to pay them. Most of them probably were at best okay value. None of them were a good value anymore. So from a, you know, very cold black and white sense of it, all the moves made sense. They were things that, you know, unfortunately, even if it's painful from a fan standpoint, those are things that smart franchises do. And they, you know, all the comments we would always hear about Bill Belichick over the years doing things a year too early instead of a year too late, and, you know, not wanting to reset the clock and kicking the can down the road. It's painful to see them kind of take some of that medicine all at once. We created some new holes that we're going to have to fill, whether it's draft picks or free agents or younger guys stepping up. But it was probably more necessary than what I was emotionally prepared for to see some of those guys leave that we had rooted for so long.
Yeah, man. It kind of reminded me when I want to play some Madden. I have to make some moves in my Madden league, you know, 32 user league. And my wife tells me, look, you have 1 hour to figure your stuff out. And I want you out of that shit, you know. And then Brandon Bean just took over his Madden and made all the moves. Just
boom, 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 boom. Yeah, that's the window. Yeah, his wife told him, you got between 3 o'clock and 7 o'clock Wednesday. Get this stuff figured out. It's like, all right, you're cut.
Absolutely, yeah, man. Crazy stuff, right? Yeah, and you kind of answered the Leo Carneiro's, shout out to Leo, question here about the team being weaker next season. I feel like those moves will be attached to new moves, and probably if Bean does a good job, like we are used to see, the Bills have a possibility to be even better. It's kind of growing pains, and like just like you said, it's emotional for us because we are attached to those guys, right? So, and they
to his question,
did a great job.
We did remove a floor. There was a floor of performance that we now remove because we knew at worst, like Jordan Poyer is a perfect example. He wasn't perfect. There were times where we saw him be a step slow. There were times where he took an angle that he could no longer finish on.
Yeah.
Mitch Morse still had some moments where he was out in space and looked awesome, but you know, he wasn't going to, you know, anchor against Quinn Williams or be able to hold up against Dexter Lawrence or like the big, strong defensive tackles. He couldn't do that anymore, but you knew there was a floor of performance that was still pretty good. So there's risk in that, but I'll use the comparison. Last year, how concerned was everyone going into the season about middle linebacker play? Like, hey, I can't believe everyone would have said we were going to be weaker at middle linebacker than we were the year before. Everyone was, well, I mean, we'll be lucky if we just get adequate play. There's no way it'll be as good as Tremaine Edmonds was. And then Terrell Bernard was better than any season
Tremaine Edmonds had
the entire time he was here. So, you know, I there's risk. There's more risk in this approach because now the younger guys have to step up. But guys like Spencer Brown last year, Terrell Bernard, even Terrell Dodson, you know, stepping in the way he did. We saw some guys step in and play at a level that really raised the floor of where some of those pieces were. So I know in the chat, Randy and Raphael are talking about, you know, Connor McGovern. He played pretty well at left guard last year. He has some experience at center. I think this probably was a planned move and something that they knew they anticipated. And now if it's David Edwards at guard, that's great. If a, you know, some awesome prospect falls to us or we can sign someone else, maybe they move McGovern back to guard. But having the options doesn't mean we're weaker. It's just different. And now there's risk because we knew the floor of what those experienced veterans left us. But there's also, we didn't know if those guys were going to fall off a cliff and we're going to lose on their level of play even more so than 2023. If Jordan Poyer took another step back or Mitch Morse lost a little more power or Trey White didn't bounce back from the recovery, then all of a sudden you're setting yourself up worse. So the idea that are we weaker than the peak of Trey White and the peak of Jordan Poyer and the peak of Mitch Morse? Yes, of course. I don't expect anyone to come in and be an immediate all pro at those spots. Although Terrell Bernard got close last year. But are we weaker than what those three would have been in 2024? Probably not. We're probably not. It's probably going to have a chance to be as good or better than what those guys would have been in 2024, even if that's painful to say.
True, man. So true. And I even told my Brazilian audience when I went live right on Wednesday when everything was happening, I went live and I told, like, in my opinion, it was fair to say that there is a discussion maybe about Cyron Neal being the most productive player out of all the released players, like in his special teams role, maybe the best player, the guy at the best level of play right now, out of all those great guys. When we think for Davis White, when we think Jordan Poyer, Mitch Morse, all still can play at a good level. But if you can look at this and maybe think, look, Cyron Neal was really good as a special teamer, as a gunner, and maybe he was the one still playing nearer to his best level among all those others, I feel like there is a discussion for this take, you know, like Cyron Neal was really good at that role, right? And another guy certainly will be missed in special teams.
I think it's debatable if he was worth the upcoming $3 million he was about to get, but that doesn't mean he wasn't our best special teams player, because he was. Mm-hmm. So it can both be, I'm okay that they moved on from him. And a lot of that is because I don't think our special teams as a whole was playing well enough to justify big contracts like that. They're like, hey, we need a $3 million gunner. Well, we weren't playing at a level where we had someone, you know, earning that contract. So I'm not concerned there, but that also doesn't mean he wasn't our best special teams player, because he was our best special teams player. So I that is still now, just like, you know, before I kind of liked it that we had the depth of Rasul Douglas and Christian Benford and Trey White and Kyir Elam. So losing Trey is concerning, but now Kyir Elam's our only backup plan. He has to be able to step up if something happens to one of those two. I like the free agent market at safety. I think we can bring in someone really beneficial, but I liked having Jordan Poyer and Taylor Rapp as the strong safety in the box. Now we have to find out, okay, is Taylor Rapp going to be a starter, or do we draft somebody there to compete with him? So we just lost some of the flexibility. Some of the guys we draft, or a Dorian Williams, or maybe a Justin Shorter, are going to have to step up into that Cyron Neal role, and it'll be cheaper. But what if our special teams takes even a further back step than what it was? Maybe it's even worse than what it was last year. It's not automatic that it's going to get better.
Yeah. But still, it's part of the game, right, Greg? You can't keep all the guys every time. The cap is real, right? And that kind of...
Yeah, we're going to have a cheaper special teams. We just have no idea if it'll be better or not.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, absolutely. And just like Ben was able, back in the beginning of this era, to find Micah Hyde, to find Jordan Poyer, to find those guys in the pro scout department and bring them on. And just like you said, it's difficult to arrive and become an all-pro since day one, kind of those guys. But you can find some very good players that might be able to become the next Poyers, Hydes, and the best, the next
guys. No one was expecting when we signed Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde, no one was expecting them to turn into all pros. You know, Micah Hyde had been, you know, the starting nickel corner for Green Bay. He hadn't really even played safety before. Jordan Poyer had never started a game beforehand. Yeah. So, you know, we can be patient and see what kind of moves they make and who they can find to be able to.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. So, Greg, and two people like very critical of McDermott, because I remember there are two kind of people in Bills Mafia, people that McDermott sometimes can do no wrong, and people that want him out like he was the worst coach ever. And I feel like both are wrong, because it's in the middle, and McDermott is a really good coach, obviously. Obviously, we would like to see him doing better in some situations where we can see some flaws. But one thing can't be criticized about McDermott. He's trying to get better. He's not like dying attached to his players, and he will go with Hyde and Poyer until they can't walk on the field anymore and lose game because of it. he's doing his job. He changed a lot of personnel in the coaching staff and now in the player department. So I feel like it shows that McDermott is trying to take that next step. He's trying to put us over that hill that has been the Kansas City Chiefs in the playoffs and not being able to get to the Super Bowl. I feel like that's something that even to the biggest critics of McDermott, you can't really say the guy isn't trying to change things up, to find new ways to succeed and to finally get over that hump, right?
Yeah, I think the reason you run into so many extreme opinions on him is, one, the team is very good. The team is good enough to win a Super Bowl, and they haven't. And it's easiest to blame the coach for that, because blaming Josh Allen or anyone else feels uncomfortable. Like, you don't want to blame our favorite player, the best thing that's ever happened to the franchise, or blaming Stephon Diggs, or blaming whoever else it might fall on. Mm-hmm. So you'll have people that are very critical of the coach and only focus on mistakes. And he has made mistakes. He has made bad decisions. He has had imperfect time management. He's had imperfect late game decisions. He's made, you know, even going back, at one point he chose to start Nathan Peterman. Like, that was his choice to do that. Yeah. That was a bad decision. He's had bad decisions. He's also had exceptionally good decisions and incredibly strong hands in rebuilding the franchise and building the infrastructure that has allowed for the best stretch of success we've had in over 30 years. So the people who defend him only focus on that part, that there are a lot of good things that you can focus on and that he's done plenty of good things. And the people who don't like him focus only on the bad things. And I'm sitting here in the middle being like, yeah, he's pretty good. He's a pretty good coach. Like, I think he's a top 10 coach in the NFL. I think he's at the lower end of that, probably 8th to 10th in that range, but he's good. He's good at what he's done. And if you go back to right now, there's a bunch of fans in San Francisco who are, you know, certain that Kyle Shanahan will never get over the hump, and he's the reason that we haven't won a Super Bowl. He's the only reason that they're good. Like, he's the biggest reason that they're doing that. He would be unemployed for 15 minutes. The same thing when Andy Reid was in Philadelphia and went to the four NFC championship games and couldn't get over the hump. And they wanted to get rid of him. Well, now he's won 3 Super Bowls and is going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. And yes, I get it. There are some examples, where Marvin Lewis was making the playoffs each year and losing the first time out, or Marty Schottenheimer had some of the runs that he did and weren't able to get over the hump. And sometimes you have the Andy Reid situation of Philadelphia. And I'm not naive enough to say that, no, that can't possibly happen in Buffalo, that there isn't some limit. But I also remind people, Andy Reid missed the playoffs 2 years in a row, and his last year was 4-12, and then he got fired. So if we get to the point where we can't get over the hump, can't get over the hump, can't get over the hump, then miss the playoffs, then go 4-13 or 5-12, sure, talk to me then that we need to fire McDermott and move on from him. But that's not when Andy Reid got fired. Andy Reid didn't get fired after going to the NFC Championship game. He got fired for missing the playoffs 2 years in a row and going 4-12, and then got a fresh start in Kansas City. So, you know, I don't think we're anywhere close to his seat being even remotely warm. Now, 4 straight division championships, 4 straight double-digit playoff season or win seasons, 4 straight playoff wins, 4 straight seasons with a playoff win. The only other team that's done that is Kansas City, out of every other franchise in the NFL. So is it good enough yet? No. He still has to find a way to win a championship. Mm. Is there a limit of where, how long we can wait for that? Sure, probably. But we're not even remotely close to it.
Yeah, man. I'd be more worried if we couldn't see him changing some stuff and trying different stuff. And
yeah.
For example, fired his offensive coordinator again. And,
yeah, he's brought in all kinds of different coaches.
He tried something different late game with his defense. He stopped being so conservative and
just
was very
this offseason. Yeah. How much easier would it have been to just keep John Butler in the secondary and promote Eric Washington to officially be the defensive coordinator and probably let, because they were in line ahead of Bobby Babich, and let Bobby Babich probably go take the defensive coordinator job in Miami or wherever else he would have got the job at. And no, he let two trusted veteran coaches go because he chose the younger up-and-coming talent over them to be the defensive coordinator. And, you know, Eric Washington left to go get the defense coordinator job in Chicago. And John Butler left because they chose Bobby Babich. That would have been much, much easier for a conservative coach who always just protects his own guys. Well, if he did that, he would have just kept Bobby or John Butler and Eric Washington, and he would have lost Bobby Babich. He didn't. He went with who the right person was. The same idea. He's the one who hired Ken Dorsey, and he realized, hey, I know the stats and metrics show that he was doing a fine job. It's not working. It's not sequencing the right way. He's not calling the plays at the right time. He's not setting us up for our most success. We have to make a change. And he did that. I think that some people gloss over those things and don't acknowledge that, hey, he is still making those hard decisions in the right spots. Again, it hasn't led to the ultimate goal. He still has to do that, but we're still a long ways off of that being the problem people like to make it.
100%. Greg, I want to congratulate you for your show that you did some weeks ago about how the Bills could open some cap space. It was very educative for all Bills Mafia, and people here in Brazil loved your work, and we talked a lot about it. And with the moves that we saw last Wednesday, with this Von Miller pay cut, like kind of trying to bet on himself to get this money back, but it's still a pay cut, right? And the Bills trying to open some cap space. We know a restructuring of Josh Allen's deal probably on the horizon, other moves probably on the horizon to make the Bills kind of players in the free agency. How much do you think the Bills can realistically open right now? Because I remember you saying like a max of 40 million, but expecting kind of 30 million in that show. You think it's still on track to that level of cap space? Yeah,
it is. So I want to give credit to Sal Capaccio from WGR. He shared that the restructure for Josh Allen is coming, and everyone knew that, but I hadn't seen it reported anywhere yet.
Awesome.
I think Leonardo in the chat was saying that from my salary cap extravaganza show, I listed out 8 players that I said would not be back at the current salary because it just didn't make sense. I thought a lot of them were going to be back on a pay cut and we're still going to be with the team. And I said, hey, these guys are not going to be with the team at this salary number. It just doesn't make sense. They could be released and the team has the leverage to release them. But I thought that leverage would lead to them coming back at a cheaper number. So I was 100% right on the names that I listed, but I was not expecting all of them to get released. I saw.
Yeah, you're too emotional.
Oh my God. I saw the math of what the leverage Brandon Bean had, but well, they're not going to release all of those guys. Yeah. And then all the news starts running. I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe they're getting rid of everybody. So all of those actually created a little bit more cap space than I projected because I was expecting them to stay at a lesser number, not going to get the whole, like Mitch Morse. I had projected, hey, we'll save 2 or 3 million, but we're not going to save all 8.5 million. Yeah. We're not going to release him. So once it went through with the full releases, it was more money there. So that made it so some of the moves I projected, like, hey, we might need to restructure Stephon Diggs. Now we don't need to. We don't need to kick any cans down the road. The Von Miller pay cut did not kick any further cans down the road. They did it as a right now. I've been checking throughout the last couple of days. As far as I can tell, they are doing it as a roster bonus being paid to him now, not a prorated signing bonus. So the cap reduction is because he's taking a pay cut and turning those into incentives that he might earn back or might not. That's just reducing his cap number. The thing for Ryan Bates, like trading him, we got a draft pick. We didn't get a ton of cap space for him. It was $1.4 million. We didn't extend Rasul Douglas. We just restructured him. So a lot of the names I listed had a transaction that was slightly different than what I projected, but the numbers still came back to, I knew the ballpark of what Bean would want as his budget to go into it. And I said, yes, if he did every single thing, he could get to 40 or 50 million in cap space. We're not going to do every single thing. But if we do all the right things and logical things, I expect the two that haven't been announced yet, or maybe there's a third one, is the Josh Allen
restructure, which is a huge one at almost $23.1 million. The Ed Oliver restructure, there's no chance for cutting Ed. That's just shuffling me around. That's easy to do. That's another $3.6 million. And then I still think there's a day, the March 18th, there's a guarantee that hits for Sam Martin's contract. That the fact that we signed Matt Hawk, if we were just going to guarantee Sam Martin's contract, you wouldn't sign Matt Hawk. So I either expect an announcement that he's been released, or my guess is they've gone to him and said, hey, if you void that guarantee, we'll let you compete with Matt Hawk for the job and you could still earn this contract, or we're going to have to release you before March 18th because we're not going to let it guarantee. So it's your choice which one. That's my guess of why they haven't announced that yet. All of those, if just the Josh Allen part hits, it'll be $25 million. If we see the Ed Oliver restructure and the Sam Martin release, it'll be $30 million, and that's my range. $25 to $30 million in cap space. People always overestimate how much you need for the draft picks. You don't need that much because they're just replacing somebody else that was already cheap. On the right, you need like $2.5 million for the entire draft class. We are going to sign some starters, but I expect deals like last year. Connor McGovern was $7.5 million a year with like a first-year cap hit around $3 or $4 million. Leonard Floyd was $7 million where he could earn up to $9 million, but he counted like $2.9 million against the cap. Deontay Hardy was like a $4 or $5 million guy, but he counted like $3 million against the cap. I expect those kind of deals, like $4 million, $6 million, $8 million players. And I expect a handful of them. I expect an edge rusher. I expect a defensive tackle. I expect a safety. I expect a wide receiver. But I expect them in that ballpark, the $4 to $8 million guys. I don't think we're splurging on anyone. And I think we'll still structure them to where they're pretty cheap in the first year.
Awesome, Greg. So that's where things start to get fun, because I want to see which of those guys you would really like to bring on, and what kind of deals if you were in Brandon Bean's shoes. So I'm using that Fun Speaks. My audience is already used
cool,
it.
Yeah, that's a cool site. I like theirs.
The numbers are kind of, I don't know, for example, I have here $25 million in cap space right now. I can open a little bit more maybe to 28 if I renegotiate Ed Oliver's deal. Let me see. So $29 million.
Yep.
Right?
I think that's a perfect number. I think that's a very realistic number, honestly. I think that's very likely of what I think will happen.
Awesome. Because I didn't touch Von Miller, Josh Allen's deal, but I could open the realistic number so we can work with in this tool and try to go after some free agents. And here it simulates, and obviously we don't know what's going to happen, but just to try to make an exercise here, do an exercise here and get some guys for us. Oh, it kind of reset everything. Awesome. But let me quickly open up that cap space again. See, cap space remaining 44.
There might be some dead cap with some of the moves. It's fine. You can go into the free agents. Yeah. We'll know that we can only use 25 to 30 of it.
Awesome. So let me advance. I think it just updated things because it wasn't up to date. And so we have the options to resign some guys, and I feel like those guys will hit the free agency. I don't know if you see any of of those.
There's
guys
only one. Well, keep them. One of them technically before. We did. So David Edwards, we technically did bring back already. He's got a cap number of $2.3 million. So that one's a real one. There's only one other name on the list that I want per se. So that one, just put in, you know, $2.3 million, because that's what he signed for this year. He could earn more money later.
I can put a little bit better to guarantee that he stays in and open the cap space here, you know, just so we can use the cap space so we're closer to the number we want. I will put here 1 year, $10 million, just to use the cap.
Oh, sure.
Be around the right number. Right?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, don't let David Edwards see that you paid him $10 million.
Yeah. Please, be very Dave, excited. Please, Dave. David, please don't take it seriously. Oh, and we rejected the offer. Awesome. It's crazy.
I think if you guarantee more.
I didn't guarantee for 1 year deal, right?
But the out of the players that are listed there, as you get ready and do this, just guarantee 100% of it, so he'll accept it.
What's going on?
The only other players that on that list that I think are possible are AJ Epenesa and Daquan Jones. I think AJ Epenesa is going to get more money than we can afford to pay, but you never know. And okay. Daquan Jones is, you know, he's 32. Yesterday we had Foley Fadakasi was in to visit. He was really, really good in New York. They tried to use him in some weird ways in Jacksonville that he wasn't well suited for, but our defense is more similar to the Jets. And him playing one tech again would be great. I would actually love to have both Daquan Jones and Foley Fadakasi. If we had those two guys, we'd be set. We'd be good for the season. And we could just draft a three tech to be at Oliver's backup in the draft.
All right.
So I'm not, you know, I'm expecting Micah Hyde to retire. I won't be upset if Shaq Lawson comes back. But other than that, same thing. If Dane Jackson comes back as a depth corner, I won't be upset. But I don't think anybody else is a priority. I think Leonard Floyd will get more money elsewhere. Gabe Davis will get more money elsewhere. You know, I don't care about Kyle Allen or Damian Harris or Latavius Murray or Trent Sherfield. Like, the only one I would try is maybe Daquan Jones. If we can get him back at, you know, 3 years and $18 million, so like $6 million a year, $6.5 million a year, that would be something I would be interested in. And I think that would put us in a good spot. You know, give him, you know, 3 years of that and guarantee the first, you know, 30-40% of it. I think that puts him in a pretty good spot. I think that's a player. Yeah, that's a, like, I, if we got that deal with him, I'd be really happy. It's protecting us a little bit with his age, but he was awesome when he played last year. So getting him back, those are the only ones that I really see would be a priority for me. Everybody else I would let test the market.
Awesome. So let others test the market. Three-year deal, you can even have a low cap number with this deal, right?
Correct. Yeah, so we could probably have him back his first year cap hit. Honestly, we could probably make that closer to like $3.5 or $4 million.
Yeah.
We could even make it lower. But that's still fine. Absolutely. $4.8 million is fine. And we know David Edwards is really $2.3 million. So those are both perfectly fine. Same thing, Taylor Rapp. I know a lot of people were upset about the number that got reported initially. Now the real numbers came out. His cap hit is $2.8 million. We can release him next year if it doesn't work out. He's fine at $2.8 million. That's a perfectly fine third safety that could earn some. If he ends up starting and playing well, he could earn $4 or $5 million, which is what a starting safety should get. So if he earns that spot, he earns more money. Same thing. David Edwards gets $2.3 million. If he starts and plays well, he could earn $4 or $5 million. That's what you want. If guys play well and earn their money, give them the money.
Hey, guys have been there. They know the schemes. Yeah. They know what the coaches want from them, right? So it's perfectly fine. Yeah. Okay. And then let's hit those free agents then. And where would you like to start? And who would you try to? Let's do it like Brandon Bean on Wednesday, right? Let's do
everything. Yeah, correct. We're gonna knock them all out all right at once. I would love to tell people some of those shiny names at the top there that I want to get: Christian Wilkins or Danielle Hunter or Calvin Ridley. And don't get me wrong, those guys would be awesome.
Yeah,
I don't think that's the end of the pool that we're swimming in. I think we're down in the kiddie pool and the other side of the pool. Let's start with safeties. Filter it to safeties. Okay,
let's go to safety.
So that second name, that's the one that I think the Xavier McKinney is going to get more money. I think that Darnell Savage would make a lot of sense. But if I'm going to take a shot at somebody, I'd love to try to take a stab at Jeremy Chinn. I think that there's size, athleticism, an awful lot there. I've seen really wide varying price estimates for him. Some have him really low. Some have him in the double digits. If I could get him at like 3 years and 21 million or 22.5, so $7.5 million a year. He was dominant in his first 2 years. And I think he's the kind of player that in the right system, I would be really, really happy to have him there. I'd guarantee you 50% of his money. I think that he has so much upside into what we're doing. He's the kind of player that I would be really, really happy to see us go after and do. So he's one.
I don't think we would try to go after another safety, but, you know, scroll down a little bit. I think Alohi Gilman is another interesting one that I actually could make a case that we could sign both of those guys. And if we did Alohi Gilman for, like, say, $2.5 or $3 million a year, I would do something like that over 3 years. And I think all of a sudden that's very similar to before when we signed Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer. And that for him, I would guarantee like 40% of that. That puts us into a spot where all of a sudden that's like our new Poyer and Hyde. If we had Jeremy Chinn and Alohi Gilman, plus you still have Taylor Rapp as a third safety, you'd be in really, really good shape.
You're giving three guys opportunities to be the new Hyde and Poyer. And maybe if we still a draft pick, right? Maybe.
Yeah, correct. No. You still bring in a draft pick. They compete with DeMar Hamlin or something like that. You have an athletic guy in day three. So let's do D-line. So we already brought back
D-line.
Do that one first. Uh-huh. So with bringing back Daquan Jones, it gives us some flexibility to look around at a couple other spots. Scroll up a little bit. So obviously we're not going to do those first couple. So I think this would put us in a spot, go down a little bit more. I would really like to pair. So that name at the bottom, so Andrew Billings, he's the kind of guy that would be a perfect one to pair with. We wouldn't have to go and try to talk Linval Joseph out of retirement. We wouldn't have to worry about how many snaps Daquan Jones plays. If I could get 50% of Daquan Jones and 50% of Andrew Billings, I'd give Andrew Billings, say, $3.5 million. Okay. That's what we are paying Tim Settle and Jordan Phillips. And he is a much more stout run defender, can really hold the line, could keep Matt Milano and Terrell Bernard, much less contact from the offense on, keep them clean. I would do that for 2 years. I'd give him a two-year deal. And I'd guarantee 50% of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Billings is an interesting guy. Do you see, Greg, Calais Campbell, who was supposed to visit the Bills that season and then chose to go for after the money at Atlanta? Do you see his possibility?
I'm reading all the moves they made this year as them really trying to lean into younger players. I think Calais Campbell, I would be very happy with it. I would not be upset at all. I think they're going to try to lean a little younger. Let's switch to edge. We'll do edge and then wide receiver, and then we'll see what kind of things we get back. All right. Mm-hmm. So go all the way up to the very top just so I can see how they rank all their guys. So obviously in a perfect world, I'd love some of the big flashy names that are here.
I know you love Daniel Hunter, right?
Oh, God.
You've tried some trades for him.
so many times. He's going to be too expensive. We're not going to be able to get him. I think there's a chance that a Yannick Ngakoue could end up like Leonard Floyd was last year. Mm-hmm. Scroll down a little bit. I already see one of the names that I know we did some homework on here. So a little bit more. Okay. So
Renard is a guy that I love.
He's going to get paid a ton. I would love to get him. I think there's a chance he gets like $20 million a year. I think he's going to get paid a ton. I would love Jonathan Grenard. He's a stud. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to get paid a ton. So there's two guys here, Anfernee Jennings from New England, and up a little bit higher, we had Yeter Gross-Matos from Carolina. Those are two guys who both have the traits, the athleticism, the ability. They weren't playing in perfect situations Jennings had Matt Judon ahead of him and some guys that are paid more ahead of him. Let's try Gross-Matos. Offer him, say, he'd be in the same range, like, say, $4 million. I think that we could get him for $4 million over 3 years. He's the kind of guy that I think we could really work well with, and he would be able to – I still would want a draft pick that has some speed and athleticism, and I think you could guarantee 50% of his.
Okay.
Let's try that one. Let's go to wide receiver. I don't want to do too many at a time, because I want two guys to accept our offer at the same time.
Yeah, true.
We'll do wide receiver and running back and then see who accepts our offers. So wide receiver is tough because some of the guys here, I would love to find a way to get a Curtis Samuel or a Tyler Boyd or a Darnell Mooney. So they would be my first effort. But realistically, I think there's two other names on the screen. Josh Reynolds and KJ Osborne are guys that I think have a more realistic chance of getting to us. So let's try Darnell Mooney first.
All right.
And I think he's going to get offered more than this. But if we offer him, if it's like $8.5 million, $8.5 million, I think he's going to get more than that. But that's where I would start. Okay. I think he deserves like $11 million. I just don't think we can do it. And we'll do that over 2 years, and I'd guarantee all of it. He could have 100% guarantee. I think that he's going to get offered more than that, but we'll see. I think we end up with a Josh Reynolds, but I think we could be patient and try the second round and see if if he's still available. Let's try running back, and then we'll submit our initial offers here.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously it'd be fun to have like a Derrick Henry or something crazy like that.
Yeah.
I think that we're going to be more like an AJ Dillon or a Gus Edwards. I think we want a power back who can really pair well with James Cook. Some people brought up Devin Singletary. I just don't think he offers all that much difference of what's there. They don't even list Gus Edwards on here. So let's go ahead.
Probably resign in the simulation.
He might have. Let's do AJ Dillon. Let's offer him, say, 2.75. And give him a $2.75 million deal. So $750,000 over 3 years, and we'll guarantee half of his. Running backs, they just want a little bit of security. All right, so let's offer those and see who accepts what we offered, and we'll do the next day. Okay. So AJ Dillon declined. Hey, Darnell Mooney accepted it. All right.
Yeah. That's a good start. And Billings as well.
Andrew Billings accepted our offer. That's a great one. Well, I'm glad Darnell Mooney did, because we lost Josh Reynolds, I see down in that list.
Yeah.
So right now, let's make scroll down and see what other safeties did. Make sure we didn't lose anybody else there. All right, so let's go back. So go ahead and do next day. Let's go back to safeties, because that's obviously our biggest gap right now, because we got an answer. One tech is solidified. So let's make another offer to Chin.
Okay.
We can play around with the cap. Let's make it $9 million.
Yeah, we kind of could have a cheap deal on Mooney, so we can.
Yeah, correct. That really helps solidify some things there.
Yeah,
let's try that. Let's make it let's try more of what we did with Mooney. Try a 2 year deal, but guarantee the whole thing.
Okay.
Because it's only 2 years, we're gonna have him on the team for the 2 years anyways. So
we'll it's do realistic in his. I can early. Yes, 100%. It's realistic, because that's a guy who might want another shot
Correct. And if he plays great, we probably would be happy to pay him the $14 or $15 million if he gets back to where he was. And go down to Alohi Gilman. Let's try him again.
Gilman here. Yeah.
Let's do 4.5.
Okay.
Do that 3 years and do that at like 60%. Let's see. Let's do Edge again. Gross Matos declined us. Let's scroll down.
You talked about Jennings, right? Jennings.
Yeah, let's try Jennings instead. Yeah. Let's offer him that same thing. Let's do $4 million for him over 3 years and guarantee half of that.
All right. And we still need the running back, right?
Yeah, and let's go take a look. Maybe who didn't get an offer in the first round and might be interested. Scroll down a little bit. Let's try Deontay Foreman. That's another guy that I think is a big jackhammer type that could be our short yardage guy. Let's offer him the same thing, 2.2750. And offer that over 2 years. And for running backs, they care about the guarantees. So give him like 75%. We'll say, hey, you're going to be on the team for 2 years. All right, let's offer those and see what comes back.
So Foreman is in, and Gilman is in. Chin and Jennings is still. Yeah. Right?
All right, he's still my number one target. He's still the guy that I want the most. Let's try one more time.
Yeah. We are probably around $10 million now, or $12 million, because of the wrong number there. But all right, so
one more time with Jeremy Chin. Otherwise, maybe we'll have to just go with Taylor Rapp and Lohi Gilman in a draft pick.
Yeah.
So let's do $10 million.
We'll do it over 4 years so I can play around with the cap hit and bring it down more and guarantee like 60% of them.
Right. Edge. No.
Yeah, let's try Edge again. That Edge is tough because you end up going into some of these like veteran guys and some of the other pieces. Switch to Edge.
Okay.
And actually scroll down to I didn't see Epinesa if he was still floating out there.
I believe he signed elsewhere.
So I'm curious. I didn't see. We could throw an offer to Jonathan Grenard and see if he accepts it. Jack Lawson's cheap. Let's go back up. I'm trying to see if there was another name that we did some work on that I think could be a fit. Carl Lawson. Let's try Carl Lawson. He's the guy that I think, from a veteran standpoint, let's offer him the $4 million that we've offered the other two. Over 2 years. Guarantee say 60% of that. So he has at least an incentive that he could get some of that next year. All right, let's see where those come from. Hey, we got Jeremy Chin. All right.
So only need the Edge to close it out. And we still have, let me see, we still have around $5 million.
Yeah, we're still doing okay. So let's go. This is the kind of scenario where with the hits we got in the other spots there, this might be a time where they go back to, it might have been a Shaq Lawson, but like now, hey, maybe we take a shot on Cleveland Farrell was a fourth overall pick, and it never seemed to work out, and it wasn't a good fit out there. But there's obviously a lot of talent from a guy who was a top five overall pick. Let's try a guy like Cleveland Farrell and see if we could get him to come in and be a rotational guy. Offer him the 1 year, $4 million, but 100% guaranteed.
Right.
You know, and otherwise, I think Edge is also a spot we can go through the draft, see what is there. Because we didn't sign Leonard Floyd last year until the end of June. That's the exact kind of guy that you would want to be able to go through. So what did we put together here? We brought back Daquan Jones and added Andrew Billings. So one tech is done. We got Darnell Mooney, which really opens up the draft. Because now let's say they like a Xavier Worthy or a Ladd McConkey or a Ricky Pearsall or a guy who's not like the Brian Thomas Jr. or Xavier Leggett or like one of the big outside stud receivers. Well, now we have Darnell Mooney. Darnell Mooney can be the outside receiver. Now you could just take whoever the best guy is, whoever the best receiver is. We now, our safety group is done. We have our new Poyer and Hyde. We have Jeremy Chin and Alohi Gilman. We've at least brought in a guy. Cleveland Farrell is the Shaq Lawson or the AJ Epinesa, like the steady guy opposite Gregory Rousseau. And then, in my opinion, we would wait through the draft to see, hey, if an edge rusher drops to us, we get him. But otherwise, this is where, hey, maybe we do go restructure a few more deals to create some space. And we try to go get whoever this year's Leonard Floyd would be. Maybe Yeter Gross-Matos maybe Yannick Ngakoue is still floating out there, and we want to go sign him later on. But you'd have a chance to do that. So those kind of moves that's the range. I think that getting the $8 to $10 million is the highest I can see. I hope that we could get Jeremy Chin for cheaper than that. But if we get Jeremy Chin, I'm going to be perfectly fine. I'm not going to care that it was 4 years and $40 million. I'll figure out how to make it work. The same thing, Darnell Mooney. If we get him for 2 years and $17 million, I'll be ecstatic. Those are the kind of deals that we can shuffle things around. They're young. They still have plenty of upside to go with. There's a ton of advanced metrics that show Darnell Mooney was much, much better than the quarterback play was giving him an opportunity to produce. Those are the same thing. Alohi Gilman had guys like I'm drawing a blank on the safety for the Chargers. Derwin James, like some guys like that playing ahead of him, that just he had more capability. He just wasn't given a lot of opportunity. Those are the kind of moves that you want to have. Andrew Billings and Daquan Jones, having one of them on the field at all times, that means Matt Milano and Terrell Bernard are able to run free. Ed Oliver, they won't be able to double team Ed because you have big stout guys like that next to him. That's really setting this defense up. And we would go now into the draft
with things much more wide open. You could just wait and see who's the best. Is there a three tech that you want to back up at Oliver? Is there an edge rusher that falls? Is there a really good receiver, but he's a slot receiver, or is more like a Khalil Shakir where he can do both inside or outside? You know, we have Deontay Foreman, which is a perfect pairing with James Cook. We have a huge jackhammer of a running back. This is the exact kind of like hole plugging off season that I expect Brandon Bean to have. He's done this every year to be able to go in. That's exactly what he's shown us before. So this isn't anything crazy. This is what he's done the rest of the time. These are the kind of moves I would expect him to make to go there. And honestly, I think some of those names are realistic targets. Mm-hmm. Those are guys you will find on our Cover One free agent target list that we've done over on our site.
Man, I'd be really happy with a haul like this, because I feel like those guys offer you some potential still, right? They can be steals in the free agency and set the floor. You can bring, you can go after those stars in the draft, right? To hit big time in the draft, right? So yeah, I'd be really happy with this kind of moves.
We're in a spot now where the draft matters a lot, but I'll give you guys an example with Kansas City. People are very excited about the last two draft classes they've had, rightfully, that, you know, hitting on some of the guys they have with, you know, having Barton and having Bolton, with Creed Humphrey, with Rashee Rice, with some of the picks that they've hit on have been really, really good. Well, the three drafts prior to that, they hit on zero, literally zero players that contributed. So it's not something where teams are always good or always bad. You know, we've shown the last couple of years some of the things we've seen now from Spencer Brown and Khalil Shakir and Terrell Bernard and Osiris Torrance and Dalton Kincaid. Like, there's a lot of contributions going here. It would help us if we have one of those really nice drafts where all of a sudden four or five guys all contribute all at once. But if we hit one of those, all of a sudden everything's okay and everything is now settled down. If you pair a good draft, we have 11 picks right now. A lot of people think that's 11 picks and reasons to trade up. My opinion is it's a lot easier to find five contributors out of 11 than it is five contributors out of seven. If we trade up, now those picks have to hit. Give me more lottery tickets. I don't care if only seven or eight make the team. Just make the picks and then see how training camp goes and see, hey, maybe we got lucky and we found another Christian Benford. Maybe we got lucky and we found another Dane Jackson or Levi Wallace. We found another, you know, late round pick that's jumping up and contributing. Give yourselves those shots to see who they could be and then figure it out later on.
Absolutely. It would be fine to find another Wyatt Teller right now.
Yeah. We'd love to do another one of those. Well, and some centers sometimes fall in the draft. Maybe Connor McGovern is the guy right now, but maybe there's a guy in the fourth or fifth round who could be the center of the future that we could bring in and let Aaron Cromer develop for a year, and then maybe 2025 he's ready to step in.
100%. Greg, thank you so much, man. I know you have your appointments, and I really appreciate you taking your time to join us today and to bring some of those options to the Bills, to clarify, to make some people who were crazy about, oh, the Bills suck now, the Bills, the window closed, and you could show us that the options are right there, man. I really appreciate you taking your time and joining us.
Absolutely. And the most reassuring thing I can tell everyone is Josh Allen is the window. The window is Josh Allen. If we still have Josh Allen, we're just fine.
And I unfortunately need to say goodbye to you with bad news, because our Botafogo did the worst thing possible in the last Brazilian championship, man. We were the first place team. We were in the first half of the season. We had a historic pace, first place. And in the second half, we did the worst choke job ever and lost the lead and finished in fifth place. And it was awful, man. So Botafogo needs to rebound this year, but it was bad. It was right alongside the Buffalo Bills, you know, end of the season, and it was difficult time for us Botafoguenses, because I know you are Botafogo as well.
Well, hopefully this will be a rebounding off season for both teams.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Greg. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you having me on. Always a pleasure. Later, Fernando. Bye, everybody.
Awesome. Thank you, man. So, Bills Mafia, that's it. Greg Thompson, I really appreciate you joining us today. I'm sorry for all the guys that sent some questions as well in the chat, and I couldn't ask all of them. Obviously, we have our time here, and Greg has his appointments, and but I feel like some of the stuff he could already answer naturally with the dynamic that we played here. Thank you so much, Bills Mafia. Make that like button, subscribe to our channel, to Buffalo Rumblings channel. Support us. This episode will be on podcast, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts soon. And I really appreciate you taking your time joining us in the Leading the Charge today. I'll be back on Sunday to Brazilian and Portuguese-speaking countries, Latin America, talking about my final mock off season, doing a mock of free agency, just like I did with Greg here, but also a mock draft. So my last mock off season before the free agency really starts. And I feel like Greg, we always can be surprised by some moves, maybe being don't go that route with all those names. All right, and I again ask you to ignore the number for David Weathers here. We did it on purpose to have the right number to work with in the free agency. But maybe the Bills don't sign all those guys, don't sign two safeties, and instead pair this money and go after a guy like Greenard to be the answer at defensive end, right? So there are some possibilities. That's what we expect from Bean with the way he has worked so far for the Bills, trying to find some interesting names that can become stars as Bills. They aren't stars yet, but they can become stars as Bills players. But we can be surprised, you know. We never know if big baller Brandon Bean, right? So we'll see. Maybe we can be surprised with a splash move out there at edge or at safety. Who knows? Time will tell. But that's what realistically we can expect from the Bills. And that's pretty good. I feel like the Bills can really retool with those options and solidify that roster and enter next season again as a contender. Because just like Greg said, we have Josh Allen. And it's time. It's time to find the new stars, the guys that will bring us new memories, right? Jordan Poyer, Tre'Davious White, Mitch Morse, all those guys gave us great memories, but it's time to create new ones. And unfortunately, those guys probably not creating many new great memories for us. Father Time is undefeated. So, Mafia, thank you so much. I appreciate you very much. Don't go away without hitting that like button. And I see you next Sunday. That's it for today. Really appreciate you, Bills Mafia. Go Bills!